Support for this podcast comes from the Fletcher School of Global Affairs at Tufts University. To start your future as a global changemaker, you must have context across fields like international business, cybersecurity, energy policy, and more. Don't just study global affairs, shape them. Visit fletcher.tufts.edu. Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at mathworks.com.
Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. The world of bicycling has many parts. Sturdy commuters, and more of them than ever. Chain-obsessed fixies, distance riders in their racing spandex, mountain bikers and cyclocrossers. The price of gas and a warming planet have a lot of people looking at their bikes. And it's good exercise, too. A whole world with its own legends and lore and style and grudge matches is out there on two wheels. This hour on Point, we're diving into the world of bicycling now. You can join the conversation. Is that you out there on the long weekend ride on the way to work, just having fun? How's the world look from two wheels these days? You can also comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. In a moment, we'll be joined by New York's famed bike snob, blogger, and a biking maven from Bike City, Portland, Oregon. But joining me first for a snapshot of the national cycling scene is Lauren Mooney, editor-in-chief of Bicycling Magazine. Lauren, welcome to the show.
Hi, Tom. Thanks so much.
Now, maybe it's just because it's spring, but I have the sense that there are more people out there bicycling and more people bicycling to work than I recall. I see commuters, it seems to me, all over the place these days. What is going on? What do we know?
Well, you're absolutely right. Recently, the U.S. Census released some American Community Survey statistics showing that since 2005, bike commuting nationwide is up 36%.
That's cool. But then I've also seen numbers maybe in your magazine that we're still down somewhere total, something like 2% of people commute to work compared to what, in Europe, 40%?
Oh, it's even less than that, actually. The national average for the percentage of Americans who bike to work is
0.55%. 0.55.
That's fairly low. But in some cities, urban areas where it's very feasible for people to get around by bike, you're seeing some pretty spectacular things happening. Portland, Oregon is at almost 6% of people biking to work. Minneapolis, Minnesota is over 4%, and they've doubled just in the last 2 years. So, again, in those urban pockets, there's some staggering increases happening.
Copenhagen, Amsterdam, they're up around 40% biking to work, so we're not in the same league as that, but on American, like, car country terms, this is impressive. You put together a list of America's top 50 bike-friendly cities, and interestingly, we'll ask Heidi Swift from Portland about this, but Portland has lost its crown as number one. Minneapolis has got it, then Portland, Boulder, Seattle, Eugene, Oregon, San Francisco, Madison, Wisconsin, right on down. How do you decide what makes a bike-friendly city these days?
Well, we weighed a lot of different factors, and obviously Portland is the king in terms of percentage of people who bike to work. We gave Minneapolis some extra credit points for just how rapid their rise has been. Not only have they doubled the number of commuters, they're looking at launching a public use bike system this summer with 1,000 bikes that will be available at kiosks around the city for anyone to use. We also gave them some, what we call horrendous winter weather points. It takes a lot of passion to bike through the Minneapolis winter. So that was another factor that put Minneapolis on top in bicycling's bike-friendly cities list.
You've got cities changing here. Washington, D.C., just in the last week, they've opened up a pair of bike lanes stretching from the White House to the Capitol, right up Pennsylvania Avenue, or the outline anyway for that is there, as work crews are working on it. Miami's been way down low, and you're giving it points for a big effort to try and improve. I mean, do you see a new focus on making cities bicycle friendly?
Yeah, and I think that what you're seeing, the planned bike lane down Pennsylvania Avenue in Washington, D.C., is really emblematic of what's going on. We even had Transportation Secretary Ray LaHood in March make the proclamation that cyclists are important users of transportation systems, that bikers and pedestrians should be taken into account in transportation infrastructure. That's an attitude that we really, it's unprecedented from our government and from the national voice. And I think what you're seeing, a lot of these cities like Miami, which was actually on bicycling's worst cities for cycling list in 2008, I think they took our criticism to heart. They came up with a bicycling master plan. They've already installed some new bike lanes, and they've done what a few other cities are doing. They've actually closed a main thoroughfare on some summer weekends to bikes and pedestrians, pretty much giving the streets back to the people and restricting car use there on some weekends.
Do we have a permanent state of conflict between drivers and bicyclists in this country, or is there a happy medium, a paradise for everyone?
Well, we're always working on a happy medium, and I think that there are a few things that need to happen on both sides in order to have better driver-cyclist relations. First of all, it's vitally important. It's even a matter of life and death. And my advice to drivers is to realize just how vulnerable a bicyclist can feel on the roadway when you're being passed by 2+ tons of metal and plastic, and they're, a foot or two away from you. It can be a fairly terrifying experience. So for drivers, pass slowly and give plenty of space. And for the cyclists, obey the rules of the road. It's going to help improve driver-cyclist relations. And I think the most important thing for cyclists to keep in mind is keep your middle finger on the handlebar.
Right on
that. The cyclist is never going to win when an incident gets escalated.
3 tons of steel and a little bit of bicycle, the lighter the better, I guess. Yes, grip those handlebars. Lauren Mooney, editor-in-chief of Bicycling Magazine, thank you very much for joining us, Lauren.
Thank you, Tom.
Here's a clip of taxi drivers in New York City complaining about the behavior of bicyclists. It's from a video for Dear Driver, a campaign to create a dialogue between cyclists and motorists.
When they drove in different lanes, not in a bicycle lanes, they have to get the tickets because it's not going to be safe for us, for them.
Instead of going the same direction with the traffic, they face traffic and they cause most of the accidents that are caused by them.
They hit your car. That's not fair. He spit on you. It's not fair. All the time they mad. I don't know why. Especially they see the car is yellow.
Think it's tough to be a bicycle driver. There's taxi drivers in New York City complaining about they spit on you. It's not fair. They hit your car. Joining us right now from New York is Evan Weiss. He was recently unmasked as the anonymous blogger behind the super popular cycling blog Bike Snob NYC. He's got a column in Bicycling Magazine and a big fan in cycling legend Lance Armstrong, who wanted to meet him for a coffee after reading his blog. His new book is Bike Snob, Systematically and Mercilessly Realigning the World of Cycling. Evan Weiss, it's great to have you with us. Thanks for being here.
Great to be here. Thank you, Tom.
You're a funny guy. You've written about bicycling from just about every angle in the world and had me really laughing here. I mean, it's life and death out there, but you're finding plenty of humor in that realm.
Well, life and death are the basis of comedy, aren't they?
Yes, I guess so.
The human drama.
And you remind us or assert that bicycling is what one of the greatest inventions ever. It has to be, you write, because even the Amish, who are very picky, they don't use, as you remind us, electricity or zippers or telephones or plastic surgery. They don't own ludicrous albums, you assert. But they're into bikes. What do the Amish know that we should all know?
Well, it's just a very practical contrivance. A bicycle is a very useful thing, and it's something that you can power all by yourself. It's very inexpensive. You can make it ostentatious, but it doesn't have to be even remotely ostentatious. And at the same time, you can use it as total recreation. It's something, you can use it in so many ways, and that's why I think it's really a great thing. You can express yourself. You can get things done. You can get fit. You can have fun, all of that stuff.
On your bike, read from us, if you would, from Bike Snob, Evan.
Read from it. Okay. All right. That's right. Amish people will ride bicycles. They might not post lengthy ride reports and photographs of their bicycles to their blogs. Amish blogs are called sermons. They might not stop at an espresso bar and sip caffeine from tiny cups while they ogle women in short skirts like the Italians do. And they certainly don't zip on any skin-tight Lycra clothing. But they will throw a leg over the saddle and pedal their retro grouchy asses down to the market for some cheese. And to me, this says a lot. It says that the Amish aren't totally crazy. It says that maybe there's some money to be made by growing a beard, infiltrating the Amish community Harrison Ford style, and opening ye old bike shoppy. But most importantly, it says the bicycle is a truly great invention. And indeed it is. The Amish can resist Brad Pitt, Angelina Jolie, pornography, ice-cold margaritas on tropical beaches, designer drugs, fast cars, actually all cars, thong underwear, American Idol, Amazon.com, and sneakers. But they can't resist the bicycle. This is because the bicycle is a truly great invention. A bicycle is a truly great invention because it is part of the entire range of human existence, from frivolity to necessity. A bicycle, if understood correctly and used to its full potential, is actually a key to a completely different and in many ways more rewarding way of life. Sure, there are limits to the ways in which you can use a bicycle, but those limits are surprisingly few. A bicycle can give you the feeling of freedom and speed you get from riding a motorcycle, the sense of well-being and peace you get from meditating, the health benefits you get from an afternoon in the gym, the sense of self-expression you get from learning to play guitar, and the feeling of victory you get from completing a marathon. It's an invention that was in many ways ahead of its time and whose time has finally come.
Eben Weiss reading from Bike Snob, and that is just terrific. Finally come?
Thank you.
Where do you get that conclusion? Because oil is expensive, because the planet's getting hot, because people just want to get on their bikes? Why now?
I think all of that stuff. I think the bicycle, I guess as we know it, came about at the end of the 1800s and was wildly popular. A lot of the stuff that people do on bicycles now, they were doing then. Mm-hmm. Groups of people doing group rides out of the city into the country and all of that. Then the car came shortly after. And look, cars obviously are great too and incredibly practical and all of that. And people ran to the car and I think, you know, in certain ways forgot the bicycle. Obviously, it never went anywhere, far mm-hmm. from it. But in terms of building cities and the way things were planned, obviously, the car kind of, people ran off with that. But now that's done, I think people are realizing, you know, the bicycle is great in the city. It's great for a lot of things. And we're sort of returning to that. And it's all evening out. Sick of the traffic, choking the towns, freaking me out, bringing me down. Knock down houses, build more lanes. Once was a problem, but now it's insane. My solution, it's one that I like. Let's nerd it. The acoustic motorbike. Zoom off. Get up on your bike. I go on. Get up on your bike.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the world of bikes, bicycling, and bicyclers. There we go now. In a time when bicycles seem to be everywhere, we're talking about bicycle culture and subcultures and tribes and road warriors. We've been joined from New York by Eben Weiss. He's got the really popular blog, Bike Snob, NYC. He's out with a new book now, Bike Snob, Systematically and Mercilessly Realigning the World of Cycling. He's a, one-time racer, daily commuter, former bike messenger, columnist now for Bicycling Magazine. He's got the New York part of the picture here. We've also got the Portland picture. Heidi Swift is with us. She's a freelance writer. She writes the Everyday Cyclist column for the Oregonian newspaper in Portland. Her blog is gritandglimmer.com. Heidi Swift, thank you very much for being here.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me.
So you guys are famous, but what is it exactly that makes you Bike City USA out there? I know the magazine has got Minneapolis at the top, but you've got the most commuters. Why?
Well, you know, I think Portland just has this amazingly galvanized community, and I can't exactly pinpoint what it is, but when you come here, I joke, I moved up from San Francisco about 4 years ago, yeah. And I joke that you arrive and they hand you a bicycle and say, welcome to Portland. And I think that, you know, a lot of people would agree with me. It's just super prevalent throughout all of, you know, everything that goes on here. And I think a lot of that has to do with, you know, we've got a great blog here, Bike Portland, that Jonathan Moss does. And it's really been a powerful force in connecting us as a community so that we can communicate and have discussions and sort of bring issues to the table and really work on what we're doing here with cycling. And I think that's been really key. And I think, you know, there's just this this mystique about cycling in Portland that for some reason we've really grabbed onto here in Portland. And it's a pretty amazing force for sure.
So when New York bicyclist meets Portland, Eben, you've been out and ridden there. You've ridden in New York a lot. Is this, you know, Godzilla mm-hmm. meets granola? you know, we have the sense of New York being kind of life and death riding and Portland being, you know, people are riding in their Birkenstocks.
I mean, it's sort of true. I mean, that's coming from New York and riding in Portland. I did that for the first time in this past fall, and it's definitely shocking in a good way. It's just so much, you can just breathe easier. It's just much more relaxed, and it's great. At the same time, some of the stuff that comes out of Portland, and I mean this in the best way possible, it's absurd. Again, in a great way, when you're in a place like New York, and
like what?
You look over, well, you see all the stuff Portland is doing. You see all the kind of wacky group rides they have, and like when Michael Jackson died, they all put on gloves and rode around, to us kind of crushed and wilted flowers here in New York, we're kind of simultaneously like amused and jealous and all of that stuff. It's great. It's like summer of love out there.
Listen, it's not all summer of love. It's certainly not all granola. I mentioned the new center bike lanes they're putting down Pennsylvania Avenue in Washington, D.C. Here's a little bit from ESPN Radio. Tony Kornheiser just went off on cyclists when talking about these center bike lanes coming in. He ended up, Lance Armstrong responded. But here's Tony Kornheiser just going off on bicyclists.
You get in Rock Creek Park, and three or four of these people start riding abreast. And, I swear to you, it's all you can do to not run them down like Wile E. Coyote. Just run them over and stay on the right. Stay on the right. I'm happy to share the road with you, but by share the road, what I mean is you have room on the right, and I have room on the road.
Okay, so he says, Lance Armstrong responded on Twitter, said, listening to Tony Kornheiser's comments, rant on ESPN Radio, RE cyclists, disgusting, ignorant, foolish, what a complete idiot from Lance Armstrong. Heidi, you don't ride on the right. As I understand it, you take the full lane as a bicyclist.
I tend to take the full lane often when I feel that it's safer if I'm riding on a road that doesn't have a bike lane. And I think that's a really important distinction to make. If I'm riding on a road that doesn't have a bike lane, that's very narrow.
Do Portlander automobile drivers understand what you're doing when you take the lane the same way a motorcycle or a car would?
Some of them do, and some of them don't. I mean, I think that, there's good drivers and bad drivers and good cyclists and bad cyclists out there, or maybe good drivers doing bad things. I don't know. But, some of them do and some of them don't. In more cases than not, I feel like I'm treated with respect and given the room that I need to be safe. And I'm a driver also. I'm a motorist. Mm-hmm. I drive a car. So, I understand what it's like to be on that side of it as well. And I try to be considerate. And when I find a spot to, maybe pull off and let a big group of cars go by, if that's the case, which is almost never the case. But if that happens, I'll do it. And I think it's about, just not being jerks, being considerate on both sides of the table. I think it comes down to some good common decency.
Evan Weiss, Heidi calls that being a vehicular cyclist, meaning taking the lane. Could you do that in New York?
Yeah, you can. Sometimes there are certain avenues in New York, obviously, that are so wide, and the traffic is so intense and fast that it's very, very difficult to do that, though. I mean, Coney Island Avenue in Brooklyn, for example, taking the lane there is kind of tough, but you can do it, yeah. But and I think with the density we have here in terms of the motor vehicles, you need more bike lanes.
When I see an adult on a bicycle, writes H.G. Wells, and you quote him, Evan, I do not despair for the future of the human race. On the other hand, meeting cars can be a little bit of a problem. Let's get our callers in here. David in Boston. David, you're on the air.
Hello. I feel lucky to have been part of several bike subcultures, including Bike Messenger in Washington, D.C., and also a cross-country cyclist years ago, and currently a bike commuter. So I love the bicycle. I think it's fantastic and can't wait to see more folks join the road. My concern as a cyclist in the Boston area is safety. I feel much less safe here as a cyclist than in a place like Portland where I've biked. And I think there is a lot of hostility from motorists towards bikers. And, as Heidi pointed out, bad behavior on both sides of the road.
So where is it, chicken and egg? I mean, where's that hostility start? Who's taking advantage of whom or what here, David?
Well, as Heidi pointed out, I'm a driver as well. I see a lot of bikers who don't know the proper hand signals or don't use them, which really causes a lot of difficulty. I think it's not one or the other. I do think it's both. I think bikers need to really try to be courteous and be aware of the rules of the road and most importantly, wear helmets. I'm amazed by the number of bikers who don't realize that, that one simple act can save their lives. But I think a lot of, you know, there was a death by a cyclist in Boston recently, and I looked at the blogs, you know, that day, and there was just a lot of anger coming from motorists who just feel that bikes don't belong on city streets at all, which is really, really a difficult position.
Doesn't seem like where we're headed. Good luck with that commute, David. I mean, Eben, what about it? David mentioned subcultures there. Are there more and less compatible bicyclists out there when it comes to sharing our very automobile-heavy highways and byways in this country?
Cyclists being compatible with each other or with traffic at large?
I guess let's look at it both ways.
I mean, you have all types of cyclists, and you have all types of drivers, and you have all types of pedestrians, and many of us, most of us, are all of those things: are drivers, cyclists, and pedestrians. That's the first thing that drives me crazy. You know, people talk about this conflict between bikes and cars, and we have this tendency to identify each other by our vehicle, which is ridiculous.
Right.
You know, we need to identify each other as ourselves and each other as human beings. I mean, it's a corny thing to say, but it's true. In terms of there are plenty of reckless, clueless, stupid, irresponsible cyclists out there, and I do my best to take them to task on my daily weblog, but there's just as many people doing that in cars. The consequences of doing it in a car are far worse than doing it on a bicycle in terms of other people. But people just need to we basically need some sort of Buddha figure to come down and bestow everyone with compassion, and that's what we need. You know,
absent that, Heidi, in Portland, our caller mentioned signals, hand signals by bicyclists. Sometimes in Boston, I think those are considered dorky to use, but heaven knows it's an awfully good idea. What about in Portland? Are you signalers, or do you just go with the flow?
I think we're, for the most part, signalers. We tend to be pretty well-mannered cyclists here. I mean, you think even, I remember Eben writing something about coming off the Hawthorne Bridge and not signaling and getting yelled at by a woman behind him.
Yep,
and I really laughed at that because it's true. We kind of keep each other in check a bit. I mean, of course, there's exceptions. But I think in general, we're pretty good about it. And we know that it's important. It's an important part of the dialogue, and it's important to do our part in traffic, you know, to be predictable and let people know how we're moving so we can stay safe.
Let's go to Taylor in Nashville, Tennessee. Taylor, you're on the air.
Hey, thanks so much.
Yeah.
One of my questions was addressed sort of recently was what could us as cyclists and as motorists do to make the situation a little bit easier? And I guess that involves cyclists being honoring street law and using signals, wearing helmets. And I don't know what it would be on the motorist part. But I am a cyclist. I ride to work because I am a delivery guy. I feel like as you balance that out, I drive throughout the day, but then I figure I should not drive to work.
Mm-hmm. So to fill your CO2 CO2 quotient working. You don't need to do it off work, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, or at least I drive pretty far, so it's really probably not making up for it.
No.
But I'm doing what I can.
Yeah.
But my other concern would be with this aggression that is between cyclists and motorists, is there like a statistic about, along with all this, like which cities are most aggressive? And then could that potentially be like what it did for Miami, putting them at the bottom of the list? Could that inspire maybe that city then to turn their attitude around?
And do you mean aggression by the motorist or the bicyclist or
both? Whatever. I mean, just to throw that statistic out there, if there were, like, if, for example, I just moved from New York City to Nashville, where I had been spit on by a bicyclist.
In New York or Nashville?
In New York.
Okay.
And we moved away from New York because coming from Nashville, I don't want to say that just the stereotype of Southern hospitality versus Northern, I don't know what it was. But it was just, we had to get out of the city because it was a little too aggressive for us, and we just came back to Nashville. But, I mean, that's just part of what I'm saying. It was just like, is it maybe the more aggressive or just the denser population cities where it's most aggressive?
We'll pick it up, and we'll think of you with all your flooding down there this week. I don't know how you commute or even drive in that. But, Eben, what about it? Cities and aggression quotients when it comes to cycling and driving.
Well, in terms of aggression, certainly in the city in general, you have more aggression. You have people are in a rush, they're impatient, there's crowds, they're irritable. Not condoning it at all, but the reason cyclists can sometimes be aggressive is because there's just a feeling of absolute rage you feel when your life is endangered. It's different than the rage you feel when you're in your car and somebody cuts you off and you're like, and you're grumbling. When that happens to you on your bicycle and you see your life flash before your eyes because someone's not paying attention because they're on the phone or they just want to get somewhere before you, it's absolutely infuriating. And again, you know, Buddha and all that, I believe we should all retain our humanity, but that's why people lose it. And the second thing I just want to throw in there, two people have called and two people have mentioned helmets, which are great and you should protect yourself, but I just don't see what wearing a helmet has to do with the way I'm treated as a cyclist. It shouldn't matter whether or not I'm wearing a helmet that a driver or anybody respects my humanity and right to the road.
Amen. Still, put the helmet on and save that egg. Katie in Fitchburg, Massachusetts. Katie, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Hi. I just wanted to call in on a specific topic. My husband and I have spent many hours riding many miles in the rail trail system in Massachusetts. And when we first started riding, we had comfort bikes, and now this year we're on brand new specialized road bikes that we're very excited about. But we found along the way that the roadies or the super fit race bike riders tend to be less friendly and accepting of other riders who may not be as fit or have as nice of a bike. And I recently read a comment from the former Tour de France rider, Bob Roll, who was encouraging a new rider to stick with it because he was frustrated by the elite attitude found in the road bike community.
Yeah.
And I was just hoping that Evan could comment on the perception that those of us who may be less fit or on a lesser bike but still have the passion about it, just if he could comment on the attitude of the more elite cyclists. And is that
Absolutely.
Something that we're just seeing on the trails, or is that – widespread in the community? And
Great, Katie. You're right in Evan Weiss's cockpit there. Evan, what about it? You've got all kinds of subcultures here, but the roadies are one of them. You know exactly what Katie's talking about.
Yeah, of course. I mean, roadies are just one subculture in cycling, and that's even just a stereotype. I mean, not every roadie that looks like a roadie is. I mean, I look like a roadie a lot of the time, but I do all kinds of riding. But
for the uninitiated, what does that mean? What's a roadie look like? Is that the all kitted out lycra spandex?
This stereotype is what she's talking about. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the racer who's kitted out and who's riding a high end carbon bike and probably races and is. You would generally see doing group rides and riding hard and all of that. And obviously, they, like any subculture, can be insular. And of course, absolutely, anybody who's insular or who doesn't treat you with respect or who's elitist, do not be bothered by that. Do not be deterred. Who cares?
But it's out there. You say overly fastidious, snotty, and aloof, the Eustace Tilly or even the Martha Stewart of the cycling world.
Yeah, I mean, what component of our society doesn't have people like that? I mean, if you're into food, you'll find the same thing, or wine or anything. You know, the key is to just ride your bike and enjoy it. If you don't like that attitude and you can't keep up with those people or you don't want to be around them, then that's not the type of cycling for you. The world of road cycling is huge. And besides race, people have this notion that road cycling is just racing, but there's touring, there's group rides, there's everything. There's just so many ways to enjoy a road bicycle and so many different types of people riding them that what one small sliver of that world thinks of you, who cares?
So your advice to Katie, she and her guy have these great new bikes. They're going to be out on the road. They're running into a little attitude. What should they do?
Laugh at them.
Laugh
at them.
Sounds good. And keep on riding.
You are.
Evan Weiss.
Yeah.
Stand by in New York. The new book is Bike Snob and Heidi Swift with the Oregonians. Everyday Cyclist column there in Bike City, USA. Listeners, you can join us. What's your attitude toward bicycling and bicycles? Talkers MC Spandex with Performance. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
Think they're so tricky with a messenger bag on their back on a Dixie, pedaling quickly down the hills. Don't blow out your knees and take a spill. An anodized chain, cards in your spokes. How can you ride? Your pants are a joke. You can barely get your hands on your handlebars. Looking kind of shaky when you're weaving through cars. You think it makes you look like a courier. It really just makes you look girlier.
We're talking this hour about the world of bikes and bicycling and bicyclers. In a time when bicycles seem to be everywhere, we're talking about bicycle culture and subcultures and tribes and road warriors. Evan Weiss is with us. He's a blogger with a famous sort of biking world blog, Bike Snob, NYC, out with a new book called Bike Snob, Systematically and Mercilessly Realigning the World of Cycling. We'll have to talk about that realignment. Heidi Swift is here from Portland, Oregon, Bike City, USA. She writes the Everyday Cyclist column for the Oregonian and keeps her own blog at gritandglimmer.com. You can join us. How's bicycling in your town, your city? Have you parked the car in the garage and taken to pedal power? What's your bicycling wisdom for us? We've got a lot of comments here on Facebook. Janet says, in the Detroit area, the drivers are far more arrogant than the cyclists. Why spandex irritates them baffles me. How exactly is it, she writes, that I am a threat to you? Here's Jason on the other side saying bike riders in Vermont are generally arrogant, entitled jerks. Just because you wear spandex doesn't give you the right to ride down the middle of the road. And Joel, I live in Paris, and we enjoy a very bike-friendly culture. Holland is even better. We'll have to sample that. Hank in Mooresville, Vermont, you're on the air, Hank.
Hi, yes, thanks for taking my call. Yeah. Great topic today. I really appreciate it because bikes are a great way for people to you know, go to a small city or whatever and park the car and ride around and do all their chores or whatever.
Yeah.
And be responsible, though. You know, I see way too many people as a bike shop owner riding down the middle of the road. You're going to ride two abreast. You know, you might as well have the outside person have a mirror so they can see if cars are coming, you know, then to go back into single file, because I've seen three or four abreast even on some of our roads here in Vermont.
You've got a bike shop, Hank. Are more people coming in? Do you sense a swelling interest in bicycling?
Yeah, I just had a lady, she said she pulled out her bike that she hadn't ridden in 14 years and wondered if she needed a new bike, but, you know, old bikes are still good.
Amen. And let's get them out, dust them off, and use them. Hank, thanks for calling. Shane in Boston. Shane, you're on the air.
Hey, how you doing?
Well.
Yeah, hi. I'm actually parked here on the road watching a stop sign. I'm seeing all these bikers just run right through a red light, which is kind of interesting. But my question would be, since we have all these bikers on the road now, why are we not having them register their bikes or at least learn the laws of the road? If there's so many that seem to be breaking these laws, I don't think they're all jerks. I just don't think that they understand that they might be breaking the law. Why don't we get them registered the same way we have to register cars and get driver's license?
How about it, Heidi, in Portland? Have you got biker licenses out there?
You know, this is an interesting conversation, and we have it a lot here. I think one of the problems with that, with registration, is that the costs associated with running a registration program far exceed the amount of revenue that it would drive. So it actually doesn't make fiscal sense for the city to implement. I agree that there could be better education for cyclists for, you know, the rules of the road. I think that's really important, and I think there's groups that are taking that on. But mm-hmm. in terms of having like a bicycle driver's license, it's when you get down to the dollars and cents, it actually doesn't make sense.
Yeah, but people may wish for it. Here's Rob. He says, this is not just a fight between cyclists and drivers. There's a fight between cyclists and pedestrians. Anyone who's ever walked across the Brooklyn Bridge at rush hour knows this. That is quite true, Rob. He says, cyclists, for the most part, do not obey traffic signals in the city, and that makes things dangerous. Eben, you know, I know exactly what he's talking about. The Brooklyn Bridge, you can get mowed down in a hurry.
Yeah, well, you know, people have to ride more responsibly, but I will just say, you know, forget the registration thing. If I'm on my bicycle and I break the law on my bicycle, a cop can pull me over and a cop can give me a ticket. I can get moving violation, all of that. And if I don't address that, if I don't pay it, my driver's license gets suspended. So, you know, I'm perfectly accountable. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just a vehicular question. It's not a legal question. Whether the police choose to enforce it, just, you know, the police also choose not to enforce people parking in the bike lane. You know, you see, they don't really enforce the speed limit in cars very, very aggressively in New York either. Mm-hmm. I definitely would like to see people take more responsibility for their riding, but
there's
that
leverage
part of it
there if they want to use it. Sunil in Lynn, Massachusetts. Sunil, you're on the air.
Hello, Tom.
Hi.
I had a recent incident. Granted, my commute is about 20 miles each way, so it's a little excessive.
Wow. How long does that take you, Sunil, just while you're on it?
It takes an hour and a half. And I can do it in an hour, but leisurely riding takes an hour and a half.
So is that 2 or 3 hours per day of bicycle commuting?
It's between 2 and 3 per day.
You must be in great shape, man. Is this by choice, or did you, I don't know, lose your car?
That's a good question. It's by choice. For me, riding a bike is therapy, so it takes me away. I know there's a hustle and bustle in the commute, but it takes me away from the hustle and bustle of the day. So
yeah.
I get great alone time riding a bike.
You must be incredibly serene. What's it like out there? What have you found?
It's a jungle out there. and a couple of incidents I'd like to point out. The one that sticks out the most was I had an incident with a police car where I actually hit a police car. I was going downhill. He was supposed to yield. He turned, and I was coming straight for him.
Yeah.
The last, 3 seconds, I yelled out, and we made eye contact, and he stopped in the middle of the road, and I hit him. Granted, I wasn't physically hurt, but...
did you fall off the bike?
I did, but psychologically I was.
Oh, yeah.
The interesting thing is he just drove off. He didn't do anything.
Nice.
Sorry. It's very jungly.
Yeah.
The big cat just strolls on into the jungle.
Right. Well, that's my worst incident. But what tends to happen maybe once every month, and granted, I am on the road for 3 hours a day, so it's not like it's happening a lot, but someone will roll down the window and yell at me and then laugh. And the thing is, when I'm on the bike, I know I say it's therapeutic, but my senses are heightened.
Yes.
And when someone yells at that point, it's very loud. And I do jump, and all that it would take would be one incident like that where I'm in traffic and me falling down, would basically end my life. And it's funny how people make me the object of humor, and then they drive off, and this seems to happen over and over again.
What's you're funny on a bike because you're on a bike?
I have no idea. No, I think it's me jumping.
Oh,
when
I see.
They yell and I react to it, that's what they find funny.
People, cut it out. Let Sunil have his serene ride to work, for heaven's sakes. He's pedaling 3 hours a day. Sunil, thank you very much for calling. The heightened senses, Heidi, do you know what he's talking about there when you're bicycling and suddenly something comes into your field of motion, life, or even auditory?
Yeah, absolutely. I think Eben touched on it earlier when, you're sort of constantly aware that you're in danger. I mean, even when you're enjoying a nice bicycle ride, there's definitely this element of being this fleshy body on this tiny bicycle in a world of, big metal cars. And I think it does heighten your senses, and it should, you should be paying better attention. And I have those same experiences, mostly with teenagers who think it's funny to yell out the side of a car and watch me jump. And it's frustrating and irritating and dangerous, actually. But it's kind of part of what we deal with, and it's part of that. Like, everyone needs to, it'd be great if people could kind of treat each other as humans instead of, as Eben pointed out, different vehicle operators. I mean, we're all kind of sisters and brothers and moms and girlfriends out there on the road.
On four wheels or two. But you also write, Heidi, about something Sunil alluded to, about the beauty of cycling and even the higher meaning it brings to your life. What do you mean by that?
I just think there's something that happens on a bike and that you really notice things more. I mean, I think is one of the main things. Instead of sort of traveling from one destination to the next and being in your car kind of in this isolated bubble, you're actually moving through your surroundings in a sort of purposeful, observant way. And, for me, I find that just brings me a lot of joy. As it was mentioned, it's definitely therapy in some way. And I feel like there's a bit of a connection on the road with other cyclists that I enjoy also. There's kind of this sense of rolling community that's pretty gratifying. And in Portland, maybe that's pronounced. But, I definitely derive, and part of it's oxygen increase, part of it's physiological.
Feels good.
Yeah, it feels good.
Eben, are you ready to roll with all this talk about, higher meaning in life? I mean, you're a New York tough guy, bike snob, snarky guy.
I couldn't be further from a tough guy, am I? I'm what they call a wuss.
Oh,
but
okay. Yet you survive.
I survive by cunning and sarcasm. But I think Heidi said it very well, and I think cycling is a contemplative activity at its best anyway, and it's very pleasant, and you can reflect while you do it, and I absolutely agree.
You've got Ernest Hemingway on the subject. It is by riding a bicycle that you learn the contours of a country best, since you have to sweat up the hills and coast down them. Thus, you remember them as they actually are. And while in a motor car, only a high hill impresses you, and you have no such accurate remembrance of country you have driven through as you gain by riding a bicycle. Evan, walk us through some of your other types here. You've got the roadie we talked about a little bit. You've got a type you call the beautiful Godzilla. What's that?
Well, it's definitely a type you encounter a lot in New York. I don't know how much elsewhere, but that would be the usually a model or somebody who looks like a model wearing designer clothes, probably on a vintage type 3-speed bicycle.
Nice.
They usually a pleasant image to be sure, but not so pleasant when they're riding right at you on the sidewalk or coming the wrong way while they're also on a cell phone, maybe with a small dog yapping from the basket. the beautiful part is they're beautiful. The Godzilla part, and beautiful Godzilla's from Seinfeld, by the way.
Okay.
The Godzilla part is because they go where they want, when they want, and because they're attractive, everybody's sort of the C's part. So they don't really have to deal with consequences like the rest of us.
What about the contraption captains? We heard MC Spandex singing there in his funny rap about fixies.
Yes.
And I'm just out of it enough not to know what that is. But contraption captains and fixies.
Well, the contraption captain was my name for people who operate bicycles like recumbents, which are those bicycles that you lie down on where you're in a recumbent position.
What is the mystique
of
that? I never quite got it. The lazy boy ride, though you're working hard, but is there something really – does something happen when you lay back on a bike that makes it double quick?
Well, it's – you know, among other things that they say, you know, it's better for the – well, let's just call it the groinal area because you're not putting pressure there.
Okay.
But, I mean, to me, they look sort of like fish, like trawling, like boats, you know, like rigs out on the sea or
prairie
something
schooners,
like that.
Little ones.
Yeah, I don't know my nautical terms, but that's sort of what it evokes. And they look like captains, and there's usually a flag involved for visibility.
Yes.
It's stunning.
And fixies, the fixed gear thing that's so popular now, is what it's just like what a lot of us grew up on, just a bike with one gear. Is it the same? Or they don't have
sort
brakes.
Of.
What's up with that?
I'm kind of a little weirded out by giving the 9 millionth explanation of what a fixie is on a mainstream program, or a fixed gear, but it's a bicycle with one gear ratio only, and it does not coast.
In other words, you always are pedaling.
Right.
And no brakes, why?
Well, they can have brakes. They can have as many brakes as you want, but that's the sort of bicycle you race on a track, on enclosed velodrome racing. So in that sort of racing, you don't use brakes on the bike. There's no need for brakes on the bike, and you can modulate your speed with your legs. Track racing bicycles, which happen to be fixed-gear bicycles, have of late become popular with the youth of America.
Mm-hmm.
So now you have them out on the road, and it's a bit of a street cred thing to ride them brakeless.
Thank you for stooping to enlighten us.
No, I don't mean it's
you know, okay.
I didn't mean to sound condescending.
Hey, you're the bike snob. We wouldn't have it any other way. Rod in Taos, New Mexico. Rod, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. I'm legally blind. Well, I'm blind now. I can't tell when the sun's shining, but I have a little different dimension. All my life, I had lost about 90% of my sight, and I lived in Houston for 50 years, and at that time, I was riding a bike 5,000 to 10,000 miles a year in heavy traffic, and my attitude was I never wanted to get in an argument with a guy with a gun or a tire in his hand because probably I would lose. So I tried my best to stay out of their way. And
poor vision, Rod, how did you do it?
Well, I don't know. Somebody said, "Well, when are you going to quit riding a bike?" And I said, "Well, when I can't see where the curve is and where the grass begins." And when I was 73, just before I left Houston, I was crossing a street and there was a car behind me, and I knew I didn't want to veer to the left, so I veered to the right a little too far, and I missed the curb by about 6 feet and ran into a stop sign. I thought, I think it's time to quit.
Rod, you sound like a miracle man to me, and I'm very glad for your call. See that sunshine. Let's get one more. Mary, Simsbury, Connecticut. Mary, our time's short, but you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Hi. I'm the first selectman of Simsbury, Connecticut, the first town in Connecticut to be designated a bike-friendly community.
Bravo you. What does it mean, Mary? What does it mean?
It means that we have encouraged biking in our community because we understand the benefits of commuting, the fact that it's fun, it's healthy, and it's a green way to travel. And Connecticut ranks 44th out of 50th, encouraging municipalities and government leaders to make their communities bike-friendly. And we've really recognized all the things that you talked about today, the benefits of biking, and we really are committed to doing that, and we were named the first town in Connecticut to do that. So I just wanted to share that with you.
That's great. Hats off to Simsbury. You go, bike town. How far can we go nationally, Heidi? I mean, you've got almost 6% of people commuting to work in Portland. What, Copenhagen, Amsterdam, they've got maybe 40%. What do you see in the future? Are we going to become that kind of country? Could we?
You know, I think it's a little unfair to make that comparison, but I definitely think we can do much better than we're doing now. And I think what it's really going to take is, reaching out these sort of insular subcultures that we've created, reaching outside of those and getting bikes into the hands of people. I mean, I think the number one way that I see people getting onto bikes is when they see someone in their lives that they identify as being like them get on a bike and ride to work. And they go, hey, I could do that, too. And so I think we have to kind of overcome that perception that we have as being a bit of a closed culture and reach outside and really put bikes into the hands of everyone. I mean, everyone can ride a bike. It's not this special thing. And we've got to really communicate that to sort of spread the word.
Here's John F. Kennedy via Evan Weiss. Nothing compares to the simple pleasure of a bike ride. It's hard to argue with that, Evan. Bike Country USA coming. What do you think, Bike Snob?
Bike Country USA, why not? Bring it on.
I hope so. Two
wheels. I think so.
Uphill, downhill.
I want it.
The bike snob wants it. We'll all take it. Evan Weiss's very funny tour of the biking life is bike snob systematically and mercilessly realigning the world of cycling. Evan, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you for having me. I enjoyed it.
And Heidi Swift in Portland, Oregon, the everyday cyclist. Thanks for joining us, Heidi.
Thank you so much.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.